for payment and for information that Shane does not know about his father. Readers will know that Shane's father had committed suicide when he was in his early teens, and that completely altered his life. So Shane is kind of attracted to this offer to find out information about his dad. And there's a couple of other small things that happened during the storyline, but that's the main one.
That's great. I thought that was a good summary. There was a lot of tenderness in this book. I've read, you know, several of the books in this series that the men showed. Jimmy toward his dog, his lost dog. I love that kind of tenderness that he was so atypical of him, you know?
Right.
Kind of the that we understand from Shane that Shane still holds for his dad. So do you think this is the most emotional book that you've written in the series?
I think so. You know, five books in, you know, I wanted to show readers an emotional arc for several of the characters and also a developing arc for Shane's relationships. So for those who haven't read the series, he has a girlfriend, Bonnie, who is a career woman. She's a lawyer. She's dealing with a whole bunch of stuff, being a woman in a legal profession. And in this particular book, Shane even gets ribbed a couple of times about, you know, hey, you're with this, you know, lovely woman. Why don't you put a ring on her finger? And, you know, Shane is also very private, but Bonnie, his girlfriend, doesn't want to get married. You know, she wants to focus on her career. So I think in this particular book, we see different facets to people. We see Shane. As you mentioned, I have the dog and Jimmy, the tenderness there. And, you know, Jimmy's a psychopath, but I also try to show people that everybody has a different side to them. You know, not everybody's black and white. A good example of that is Tony Two Times, who is kind of like this mafia enforcer, not somebody you want to meet in a dark alley, but there's a scene where we find, you know, he goes to visit. Now, Shane does not know why Tony's taking him to this place, but Tony basically defends a drag queen who's being ripped off by a manager. And then we see a different side to Tony defending that guy and why he defended him.
Yeah.
So my point is that in crime fiction, sometimes we see black and white, and I want to show gray because, and this might be a little bit philosophical, but I don't think there's ever an I with somebody, you know. We're defined by our relationships to other people. So you may know me, but you will see a side of me that I may not show someone else. And when you have these different relationships and different experiences, we see a three-dimensionality to these characters. And I think maybe to some extent, you know, in crime fiction, we deal with unlikable characters, but I want my characters to be likable, even though they may not be good all the time, and they might be doing things that are very bad, but they're human.
Right. It's interesting. You're morphing the genre a bit in your protagonist, because, you know, the classic PI protagonist is kind of a loner, sort of a one-dimensionality to them. But Shane certainly is not. I love that you say that you're framing the character trajectory around his relationships. I mean, that's pretty clear now that you say it to me.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is, and I think we've had these familiar tropes where the PI is a loner. The PI is either an alcoholic or an ex-alcoholic. Yeah. Somebody with anger management issues, you know, anti-authoritarian. He does not get along with power structures. You know, here I show Shane as an outsider to a certain degree, but I also show that he knows how to work with power structures. And, you know, I wouldn't say he has anger management issues, but he does have experience with Vietnam that I guess you could argue gave him PTSD. He's macho in the sense that he doesn't want to share that experience with Bonnie. And initially that was a conflict with them because she felt that he was not being honest, that he was holding back. Mm-hmm. And I think like most men of that era, they didn't talk about their combat experience, or at a deeper level, they may feel that if my wife knew this side of me, the things I've done, she may not love me, or she may be afraid of me, mm-hmm. because I had to do X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, what I'm trying to say is that there's layers to every person. I really believe that.
Yeah, and you see many of the layers through Shane's interactions with not only his relationships, his primary relationships, but his relationships with the other characters in the neighborhood, the haunts he goes to, I'm thinking of the restaurant person, the guy who's the professor. I mean, there are four or five or six secondary or tertiary characters who are just wonderful and three-dimensional, even though they show up briefly in the novel.
Right. And I try to show different aspects of Shane's life and his personality. With the professor, we become aware that Shane is an educated man.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, you know, we see that with the death of his father, how his whole life pivoted in this other direction. You know, his mother ended up dying of a broken heart. You know, he couldn't continue school, so he went into the military. You know, he didn't know what to do with himself. I think, you know, trying to show character by decisions, you know, good and bad. He's non-judgmental, which I think makes him an exception to the error. You know, he's not racist. You know, he's friends with John, who is African American. He's got a relationship with Bill, who is on the police force, who's closeted, because of the error. And also, Bill also has another connection to Shane, in the sense that Bill is also a veteran, although we don't go deep into that experience. And then, of course, you know, the neighborhood characters. He's got the mob guy. You know, he's got different people he interacts with.
I love that.
And the only thing is, I think, you know, and people, this may not be apparent to people, but the South End in Boston, which is not Southie. Southie is, you know, very Irish. That's the area that Dennis Lehane writes a lot about. The South End is different. So the South End historically was very multi,
ethnic,
very diverse, very ethnic, exactly. It was the neighborhood where you went to go to see Black and Latino musicians. It is where you went to see performers. Sammy Davis Jr. used to come down here and perform before he went into Scully Square. This is where the Pullman strike originated. So, you know, I wanted to pick an area because when you write about Boston, the first thing people think of is Dennis or the late Robert Parker, or maybe George Higgins. So I wanted to pick a slice that was different, maybe something that people weren't going to know.
That's right. And I think your series certainly picked not only an area, but an era that's not always the focus of crime fiction. So I really love that part of it. Tell me about this. Shane is so philosophical and he's so well-read. And he'll riff on the classics, or he'll riff on popular culture. very astute in music. I mean, he's a Renaissance man in a lot of ways. I really like that about him. And at the same time, I like it that he can take a punch, which he did a lot of times in this in the Big Lebowski. So I mean,
right, right.
See, that's a big turn on. I don't know if it is for everybody else.
Well, I put aspects of that in his personality because I also, you know, wanted to figure out ways of conveying the error to readers, you know, because I'm aware now, you know, now that I'm in my mid-50s, that there are readers out there who do not know the 70s, or yes, they might know a cliche of it. They might like, they might know disco, but they might not know the on-the-ground reality. And I think it was a very cynical time, in my opinion. Now, I was a little kid then, so when I say that, I'm sort of saying that looking over my shoulder, because when you're a kid, you just, you know, you're living it, you're dealing with it. You don't really have perspective until you get older. But it was an error that I think would shock a lot of people, because I'll give you a good example. My grandmother could not get, my grandmother could not buy a refrigerator without getting her husband's permission. And she went down to the department store. She knew the salesperson, knew the store. They'd been there a gazillion times. And not only did the guy say, "Oh, Helen, we need to call John to ask him if this is okay." And then after that, now, meanwhile, my grandfather's at work. You know, he just said to her, you know, go down and pick the refrigerator, write a check. So she had the checkbook. Then on top of it, takes out the checkbook and gets told that they have to ask the husband, my grandfather, and then they have to call the bank. They have to call the bank to get permission. Now, my grandmother was ahead of her time. She said, "The hell with this. I'm going to go get a job. I'm going to pay because I want my refrigerator." Now, my poor grandfather comes home. He sees no refrigerator. He thinks there's going to be a new refrigerator. So he goes, "Helen, what happened to the refrigerator?" And she had a few choice words. She's like, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get my refrigerator. And so my grandfather knew to pick his battles. So he's like, okay. But it was a different era.
It was definitely a different era. And you do such a nice job, I think, of keeping folks steeped in the era, even across the series. I remember, I don't remember which book it was, but we, you know, you get a look at the into busing. You start to understand some of the energy around busing. You and I talked to you today about the new movie about Shirley Chisholm, which is in that same era. And I had forgotten that that's the first time that 18-year-olds could vote in national elections. You know? Before that, you had to be 21. And so I understand what you're saying about it. It's a cynical time. And it's also a time of great possibility, it seems to me. You know, young people are protesting, you know, people, we got Kent State. I mean, there's so many pivotal kind of things happening in that time, too.
And I think one of the things that readers have to be aware of is that this was a time where women were really coming into the workforce, and there was a lot of resentment.
After World War II, coming back into the workforce.
Right. And, you know, I, again, talking about my grandmother worked in the factories during World War II. So women had a taste of that autonomy, and then they had to give it up and go back. And one of the things that you mentioned, Shirley Chisholm, one of the things I found very shocking in that movie was you would have thought that she would have experienced overt racism. And she did, but she made a comment. She says, "I got opposition from men, period. I got resistance from men of color.
Yeah, that's right.
I expected it from white men, but I did not expect it from African-American men." And the one thing I do want to tell readers is that if anything, I feel I downplayed the racism and the language in that era, because I remember as a kid hearing the language from both sides of the street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, white people call black people things, black people call white people things, black people call black people things.
Yeah.
You know, none of which I would feel comfortable saying. But it's a reality that I think people forgot.
Yeah.
You know, I think today we're maybe a little overly concerned about offending people. You know, I mean, but the reality, if you want to be truthful, is it was a pretty raw.
Yeah.
Right. It was a pretty raw error. Nobody blinked when they said words.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's a good point. So I want to wind us down a little bit. I'm looking at the time.
Okay.
Talk to me a little bit more about where you see the series going, where you kind of left us in the big lie with a cliffhanger for Shane. Certainly an emotional cliffhanger. Where do you see the next book or two going?
So without giving away that cliffhanger, I think I have to make a decision with Shane. Based on what happened or what's revealed to Shane, he has a choice. He can either go very dark, or he can try to figure out a way creatively to take the negative and somehow make it positive.
Yes.
In addition to the other things he's juggling in his life, you know, his relationship with Bonnie, because I think one of the things you see in The Big Lie is Shane is getting into these situations where if he tells Bonnie X, Y, Z, that might create an ethical problem for her because she's a lawyer.
That's right.
So, but they've also had this ongoing tension of, and I think this is a very male-female thing, you're closed off, you don't tell me everything, you don't communicate.
Right.
And he has to explain to her there's reasons why I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think there are times where, you know, Shane is seeing, without giving a detail away, Shane is seeing that there are times where Bonnie's not telling him everything for a good reason.
Yes,
so I think that, you know, I have a creative issue or dilemma to choose.
Yeah,
now, if I have Shane go dark, does that mean there's redemption? You know, does he go through his dark night of the soul and then come out?
Right.
Or does he take the higher road and not exercise a will or an instinct that people would want to exercise?
It's an interesting problem to have, and I could see it going either way, and maybe there's even some middle ground in there. I can't wait to read the next one. I'm going like, what? You know, I love The Big Lie. I love that I got to see Shane in a slightly different light. I loved all the characters in there. I love that we got to see Bonnie, a little of Bonnie's fullness in this book. I highly recommend it to folks who like noir and who like the classic themes of crime fiction, but also who like the fact that the genre is morphing for new audiences and new readers. So you do
and that. You know, I want to tell people, you know, don't be afraid of noir. I mean, I know it has a reputation for being dark, depressing, or maybe cynical, maybe pessimistic, but I have a lot of humor in this series.
Lots of humor, yeah. Lots and, of music. There's food. Right.
There's food. But, you know, all of it gives a flavor to the era. And humor is, I think, very difficult to write. But, you know, I think humor is a defense mechanism. It takes the edge off of things. So, I want people to have a fun time. I want them to enjoy spending time with these characters. And I always ask people, you know, who have read the series, I ask them, who was your favorite character? And, you know, the answer is actually quite surprising. I've had people say Tony.
Yes, I can see that.
I've had more than one person say the cat, you know, Shane.
Delilah's
a cat. And that was my hat tip to Cozies.
Absolutely. And you're a hat tip to your own cat, Munchkin, I'm sure.
Yes. They all have personalities.
Yes, they do. And Delilah sure has one. So I'm going to just put myself out and say,
okay,
the next book, I think Delilah's going to help Shane figure out the right thing to do, the right reaction to have.
Yes.
And let me just invite readers to take a look at The Big Lie and the complete Shane Cleary series. It's really a wonderful read, full of all the characteristics you just described, Gabriel. It's a joy to talk to you always in person or virtually. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you very much. Glad you enjoyed it.